Welcome to today's edition of Time in the Vineyard with Pastor Teacher Jeff Toring. Today's broadcast is being brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Macedonia, Ohio.
First Thessalonians chapter 1, verse 1 says, Paul and Silvanus and Timotheus unto the church of the Thessalonians in God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. This morning we're going to do a little bit of a different than giving an exposition in Scripture. Today will be more of a topical. It'll be probably more as an address rather than a sermon. I would like to take some time to teach in a way of ecclesiology. Some of you are sitting there, and this is again will be new ground for you. For some will be review, but I'd like to teach some ecclesiology out of what's happening here in verse 1. And so what we find in verse 1 is that the letter is written sort of by three people, Paul, Silvanus, and Timotheus. I believe it's written by Paul, just happens to have his colleagues with him, Silas or Silvanus, same person, and Timothy. And he writes it, he says, unto the church of the Thessalonians in God our Father and the Lord Jesus Christ. But I want to focus on ecclesiology, which is the study of the church. Ecclesiology or Ecclesiastes or Ecclesia. And that's what he says here in the Greek language. He says, Paul and Silvanus and Timotheus unto the Ecclesia. The Ecclesia, that's the Greek word that he uses. And so what we want to do, and I would like to take us through, and just in some review of looking at how the place of worship, or what we know of here, it says as the church, or the ecclesia, we'll get to the definition of that, but I want to just for review to show how the things have come along through the years as far as place of worship that God has designed all the way back from the beginning, all the way until here in the New Testament, and how it's kind of changed. So we'll run through that briefly, and we look back to the Old Testament, back to the call of Abraham, or even before Abraham, Noah, Moses, these things. And so we find, first of all, that there was a surrounding of worship as an altar. Now, there was a couple different kinds of altars. There was an altar that would be of sacrifice, where they would burn animals and sacrifice animals to God and to false gods, in fact, back then. And then you had some altars that were just made of stone. They would look really actually pretty similar to the pulpit, but a lot of times they made of stone, and they were made sometimes by way of memory, like when they crossed the Jordan, they took stones from the middle of the Jordan, and they placed them on side as a memorial to remind us that God has done something and that we are in a relationship with God. So sometimes these altars, we find back in the patriarchal period with Abraham, Abraham built an altar. It would become a place of worship, a place of communion with God. It would be a kind of a special meeting place with God. And he would build these things. And then right from Abraham, it was a family-oriented thing. So there's private worship involved. And then there's also corporate worship. So when we gather as a church, we are worshiping God. We are adoring and learning about God in a corporate fashion. We're doing this together as a unit. And that starts with Abraham and his family. But as the Abrahamic covenant grows, and Abraham's tribe grows, and his business grows, so his employees then, all these people begin to come and assemble around an altar. And then we see it progress through the years, the place of worship. We see that eventually Moses comes on the scene, and he is told by God, I want you to build me a tabernacle or a tent to worship in so that we can gather together in a corporate way in a larger group. The whole nation of Israel would gather around the tent, the tabernacle, and then they learned how to worship. And in fact, they did worship. And then later on you find that David comes on the scene, King David and Solomon, and they said, well, we don't think God should live in tents when I live in a built house. So we have then the first temple that is built. And again, corporate worship, private worship takes place within the temple. And then you have the captivity periods. Babylonians come, invade Israel, take them away, and they're held captive in Babylon in a faraway land. They still need to worship, but they can't go to the temple because they're nowhere near there. So now we have the introduction that we know of as the synagogue. So the synagogue starts to come into place. That's the initiation there. It started in a faraway land in Babylon when they were in captivity. And then eventually they get released from captivity, and the Jews go home again because of the Abrahamic covenant and how it's formed, and they build another temple called Herod's Temple. Herod's Temple was the temple that was on the same place as Solomon's Temple, but rebuilt, and you find that in the day of Jesus. Then after Jesus comes, the temple is destroyed in 70 AD, but the temple is no longer in use anyway because we have what's known as the church that is assembled. The church becomes assembled. And then, actually, if we were to continue just to follow up on history in future times, once the church age is over, then we'll have another temple erected where Jesus will literally come and meet with his people, and we will worship there for 1,000 years. But that's going toward the future, and so what we want to do is look towards now here in our letter of Thessalonians in 54 AD, when he says here to the church that is in Thessalonica. We find Thessalonica is still one of the cities that remain even unto this day. A city in Greece. We just had the Olympics there not too long ago. It's the same city. The city probably has only increased by twice in population. I'm told that at this time that Thessalonica was probably inhabited around the population around 400,000 people, which is a large city when you think about it. So they go through here, and Paul and Silvanus, they go there and they plant the church. And he writes this letter and he says it unto the church. Now, we find here, when Jesus is teaching, we find it early on in his ministry that he's in the temple, and he calls the temple, my Father's house. Then later on, remember, when he cleans out the temple, when he makes the scourge, and he goes through there, and he says, you shall not make my Father's house a den of thieves. So what he is doing there is he is calling this place of worship, the temple. He's saying, this is my Father's house. This is God's house. And actually, Dan prayed today in the prayer during the offering. He talked about the church house or the house of God. And so there's different terms that are used when you study ecclesiology and what's being said here. And so when we look at this, we find that later on, Jesus eventually called the temple my house, that it was Jesus' house. And then you find also throughout the Old Testament that they worshipped in a place that was called Bethel. The city was called Bethel. That's Hebrew for Beth is house, and El is God. So they called it again there, a house of God. And here, though, they don't use this terminology. Paul doesn't write it, and he doesn't say Paul and Silvanus and Timotheus unto the house of God. He says, in the Greek there, he writes it to the ekklesia. That's the literal word there. Now, ekklesia was a very common word at the time. It was a Grecian word. That's obviously it's Greek language. It's a Greek word. It's called ekklesia. And the definition that was very common in those days of the word ekklesia, everyone would have known what it is. And it was, the ekklesia was a called out body of citizens of a Grecian town that would assemble to do the affairs, the political affairs of the town. So it would be very similar to our city council. They were called together, men. Now, we're not told if they were elected men or if they were appointed. I believe probably more than likely, being Alexander the Great and the heaviness of his hand, he probably appointed them, which would actually follow into place with ecclesia and the church and the appointments that go as far as election goes. The word is ecclesia. It's called out body. It's a called out body of believers assembled here, though, but it was a secular word. It had nothing to do with church. It was politics. It was the ecclesia. Well, what is the ecclesia? Well, everybody knows what the ecclesia is. It's when these certain appointed people of the city get together and they talk about the affairs of the government, the local city government. Everyone knew that. Until Jesus comes on the scene and Jesus commands the language. Because Jesus asked the question to Peter then eventually. He says, Peter, who do men say that I am? Peter says, well, some are saying you're Jeremiah, some are saying you're some prophet. And then Jesus asks Peter, he says, Peter, who do you say that I am? Peter responds, you're the Christ. You're the Son of the living God. And then Jesus responds to that staggering statement, flesh and blood has not revealed that to you, Peter, but my Father in heaven has revealed that to you. So he's talking of a pretty heavy statement there. You're the Son of God. Then Jesus responds to that phrase, you're the Son of the living God. He responds, upon this rock, I will build my ecclesia. So Jesus takes a term that is very common in the days, completely about secular government, and he commands that term and he says, this is what I'm going to do, Peter. Upon this rock, upon that statement that you just made, I'm going to build my called out assembly, my assembly that will be appointed, that will run the affairs that I choose, the kingdom affairs, the church affairs. But what we see here is, and I'm sure you would question then, well, how did we come up with church? Because it doesn't say Paul and Silvanus and Timotheus unto the ecclesia. It doesn't say it either in a transliteration. It doesn't say Paul and Silvanus unto this assembly of believers. It does to this called out body. No, it doesn't say that at all. In fact, what it says is, I'm writing to the church. So how do we get from ecclesia, or ecclesia, this called out body that's going to run the government, to the word church? And do those definitions match your definition? What do you think of when you hear the word church? We have people say all the time, well, I'm going to email the church. What do you mean by that? Who's the church? And who are you sending an email to? Well, the ecclesia there is a called out body of believers. So the church is actually made up of people. We're the church, the people. We're the called out body that Jesus says, I'm going to build this body, this assembly that will run the affairs after I'm gone. But we have in our mind, because of the words, a little bit, a few different definitions. And it's okay. So people say, well, you're in heresy because you don't understand things. No, no, no. Have any of you had any affairs with your city? Any of you have ever heard of any fighting with City Hall? And what you say is I'm going up against the city. How are you going up against the city? You're not really going up against the city. You're going up against the people of City Hall. You're going up against the people, a small body who run the city. And so you can see there when you say, well, we came to church today. We came to the building. So the definitions are beginning to progress. So what I want to do is to just, by way of teaching, so that we understand the ecclesiology of it, the study of the church, is how do we get from this word, called out body of believers, to finally here in our English translation, he's writing it to the church. And I think it'll be helpful so that we just understand what he's saying and we understand what we are doing. So we know it's called etymology. Etymology is the study of words. We follow words. We know that English was not the first language in the world. And we also know that Paul and Silas and Timotheus did not use King James Bible. They didn't have English back then. They you know, you hear the song, well, it's good for Paul, it's good for Silas, it's good for me. Yeah, okay. Well, that didn't work out so well. So anyway, what we want to do is we want to find this. And so what happens is Jesus makes this command statement. I am going to build my ecclesia, and the gates of hell will not prevail against her. So then what happens is you have persecution in the church. They were persecuted, and they were slung out all over the place. They ran for their lives. You could no longer meet in the temple. the place that was originally called my house. Jesus said, this is my house. This is where we worship in a corporate way. You could no longer do that safely. So they ran for their lives and they began to meet in houses. But they still spoke Greek, and so the Greek word that they used when they began to go this way is, first we know the Greek word for Lord that they called Jesus was Kyrios. Kyrios. That's Lord in the Greek. So they called Jesus. They would make you say, Caesar is Kyrios. Caesar is Lord. But we knew, and the church knew, that that's not true, that Jesus was Kyrios. So what they did is they began to meet in homes. And then as the language then started to go on, Kyrios is Lord, and you had a derivative of that, which was Kyriakon Doma. I know you don't speak Greek, and neither do I. But we're tracing it down. You can see the word similarity. Kyrios, Kyriakon, and then another word, Doma. Doma is house. Kyriakon is a derivative of Kyrios, meaning Lord. So what the people would say is when you would go to someone's home and meet for church, they would say that this home, this house, belongs to the Lord. So Kyrios and Kyriakon. Now pay attention to the sounds that I'm saying, because that's how the words are beginning to progress. Kyrios, Kyriakon, Doma. The suffix that they're putting on Kyrios is now this is of the Lord. This house is of the Lord. This is the Lord's house. Because they're meeting there to worship, and people actually are giving up their home for the church, for what we know as what eventually will become the church in the English language. But we know that the persecution was terrible. The people ran for their lives. We read in the New Testament of a guy named Jason, who was attached to the synagogue that became a church, that they drug him out of his own house. And then what would happen is, as many of those homes then would be confiscated, because for you to say that Caesar is not Lord, but that Jesus is Lord, and it's all coming from this one facility of your home, and you're guilty now of treason, you lose your home. They would just take that house. So in order to say, you know what, it doesn't really matter because it's not my house anyway. It's Kyriakon Doma. It's God's house. It's the Lord's house. And the church was very small because there wasn't a whole lot of believers around. And so Paul comes to Thessalonica, and imagine that. Paul, you know, you got to put yourself back in 55 AD or 65 when he's doing this. You know, there's nobody who knows. Like now we go out and say, well, Jesus is Lord. Well, who's Jesus? Well, everybody knows who Jesus is. But not in 55 AD in Thessalonica. They're all pagans. They think mythology. So they come to town and they say, hi, I have a story to tell you. Oh, you do? What's the story? Well, there's this guy in Jesus of Nazareth. You've heard of him? Yeah, we've kind of heard of him. Isn't he the guy that supposedly walked on water? Yeah, that's him. And then they tell the gospel. Well, Jesus died for your sins. And they believed, actually, that story. And a little church was planted there in Thessalonica. Very small. A little couple believers. They're nowhere near Jerusalem anymore. We're in Greece. And the church is planted. But they're still running for their lives, and they're beginning to lose their homes. And the church then, as they get persecuted more, they run from there and leave there, and then they go further. And the gospel and these Kyriakon Domas, house churches, are spreading like they're supposed to. So finally, when you get a little further up north and you move away into the world, it's starting to expand, we get into Europe. And Europe don't speak so much, and the languages are changing, and the times are changing. So finally, you get the Germanistic teachings, the Germanistic languages, and the Dutch language. And the Dutch came up with, well, instead of calling it Kyriak, we call it Kirky. Same word, different language. And then from Dutch, you have German, and it went from Kirky to Kirk. And then the German language progressed, and you know how the Germans, when they talk, they're, you know, it's like they got a hocker every time or something, you know, it's like Kirk. Kirk became church. So that's how we get from ecclesia, ecclesia, through the words, through the church, the living organism, all the way to finally we get to this letter and we get the English translation, and he says, I'm writing to the church. Now, to further our study here in ecclesiology, the church is progressing. We don't meet in homes anymore, do we? So what happened? And we say things like, I'm going to the church. I'm going to the ecclesia. Because it still means ecclesia, even though it's translated in English into church. The word there is still ecclesia. It's still preserved for us in its original language so that we will understand what they originally were writing, even though the word has changed through the definitions and through the languages. But the church is progressing. How could that happen? The same way ours was doing that. Our church, remember, we used to meet in our home. Because we only had... We started with 7 people, so it was easy to meet and have church in your home. But then go to like 20 or 30 people. And then we got to the point where we said, we love you guys, we want you to learn, but if it's 12:30, church has been over for 4 hours. Go home already. And then they leave, and at 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, we're over there with the vacuum cleaners trying to clean house. Now, that's how it was happening here. The same way, because people are people. It's just the people that were gathering together in one place. Then it got to be too much. So people were coming at different times, and they were bringing different food. And it was getting to be chaos. It was becoming disorderly. Now, don't forget now, too, that the pastor of the church, one of his qualifications is hospitality. Why? Because we're supposed to have all the sheep over to our house. But what happened was, is he would basically end up giving his house over to everybody. It was overrun by the church as it grew. And then he was called to preach somewhere else, so he just said the exact same Greek words, kuriak andoma. This is the Lord's house. It's no longer mine. And he would leave. And then the people would begin to assemble and overrun the house. And it got to be so much so that that became what is known as the church. It used to be his house. But now it's a building that is known of as the church. It becomes to be known as the house of God. The church house. And we find that if you turn over real quick just to 1 Timothy... He calls it exactly that in 1 Timothy chapter 3. In 1 Timothy 3, Paul is writing about how the church is progressing now. We're having pastors and deacons. We have to have some sort of run because we cannot have disorder in the church. And so what happens was, as they come down, in verse 14 he says, "These things write I unto thee, hoping to come unto you shortly. But if I tarry long... that you may know how you ought to behave thyself in the house of God." So there we're starting to call this thing a building. He's calling it the house of God, which is the church, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of truth. So then finally, after all our study of ecclesiology and we find where it came from and how it progressed, then we come back to our text. And Paul and Silvanus and Timotheus, they write this letter unto the church, the called out body of believers that assemble in a local organized body. The same thing that Jesus said, I will build my ecclesia, my body of called out believers that will run the governmental affairs of the kingdom during the church. Now, I have an addendum to this, and like I said, it's an address I'm just teaching. But just a small comment. Some denominations then take that even further when they say that it's the ecclesia, the called out. They take the original language of that, and that it's saying it's a appointed body of people that run the governmental affairs. And then they begin to be called the ecclesia, the church. And so if you go into the Roman Catholic system of church, or into some of the Episcopalian, where there's big denominational things, the papacy in Rome, then that's how they justify, that's the church. because they are running the affairs. It's the hierarchy. It's the people who are appointed to run stuff. Now, we don't believe that, but in some fashion, some form, we do a little, because that's why some people, when they say, I'm going to email the church, or I'm calling the church, who are they calling? The leadership of the church. So there's some truth to it, but if you go too much, then you start falling off the wagon and into thinking that you're not part of the church, and you are. We are the church.
You've been listening to Time in the Vineyard with pastor-teacher Jeff Toring. Today's broadcast was brought to you from the pulpit of Liberty Valley Church, Macedonia, Ohio. For more information, you can call the church at 330-554-7606 or check us out on the web at libertyvalleychurch.org. That's libertyvalleychurch.org.